be prepared for some pain. It's going to be difficult. It's not going to be what people think it is. A lot of people, oh, we're just going to go back to normal.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is Peter DeJager. Here's three facts that I think you should know about Peter. One, he has a podcast called Y2K, an autobiography, and you can find it on iTunes and other podcasts. Two, he has been cast as a character in a science fiction novel in Robert Sawyer's Rollback. It's a fictional story about rejuvenation and first contact. Three, he was born in South Africa, raised in Ireland, and now lives in Canada. Oh, and here's a bonus point. He's fascinated by the Japanese game of Go, which is a 4,000-year-old strategy board game. Peter DeJager, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Nice to be back with you. It's been a while.
Been a while since we've talked. Yes, and since you visited me on my radio show many years ago. Delighted to have you back. Peter, you are a specialist in change management. You also have the distinction of helping people deal with the change when we faced the crisis of the Y2K challenge. And fortunately, we avoided the end of the world because everything happened very quickly in time. Now we're going through change again with the pandemic. And we're now starting to feel like, oh, maybe we got it under control and we can start going back to work. I wonder, what are the changes that you foresee or think about or hear about we're gonna face when we try going back to work as normal?
One of the statements that you hear all the time right now, it's in the media, it's in the conversation with people, is that we are going to go back to normal. As if normal was a place that hasn't changed. And the reality is that there is no going back to normal. COVID-19 has literally changed the world in so many ways. We have been working at home for more than a year. That's the vast majority of white-collar workers. And the notion that we can slip back into our normal daily routine of 2 years ago is naive at best. We're in for a surprise.
And the surprise, can you tell us what the surprise is so we won't be so surprised?
Over the last year, we've been living in chaos, basically making it up as we go along. Even the product that we're using right now, Zoom, no one had really heard about this before COVID started. And all of a sudden, it's one of the hottest tickets on the stock market for the simple reason that there was a need to use it. Over the last year, as we've tried to deal with chaos, we've built rituals for ourselves. While we're not driving into work anymore, we're getting up in the morning, going down to our computer, putting on a pot of coffee. We have a little schedule. First, I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do this to make it through the day. And after a year, those behaviors have become ingrained. If we think that we're going to tomorrow or next week go back into the office and pick up where we left off a year ago, then we're ignoring all the habits that we've made over the last year. We're also ignoring some of the many benefits of working from home. I don't have to put up with traffic anymore in Toronto, which is a nightmare. I don't have to do that. I save myself 2 hours a day commuting. I don't have to do small talk. Maybe I'm an introvert. Maybe I don't like being with people, but before I had to. Well, now I have to go back to that. We'll be doing socializing differently than we did before. And while it might be a relief to get off Zoom or any one of the other many products that are out there, having real life face-to-face meetings is going to be different again. And the key here is to understand that we're not going back to normal. We're going back to a new form of chaos, and it's going to take us another 3 to 6 months to become familiar with that environment. One of the things that managers need to do is recognize old habits now, old as in the last year, are going to be modified once again. And unless we take that into account as we try to, you know, go through the transition, the change of coming back, we're going to make mistakes. We have to help people through this transition as much as we were able to help them going into the chaos.
Coming out of chaos itself can be chaotic.
Very much so. Very much so. There are some people who are nervous now after a year of being secluded, isolated, in solitary confinement. They now have to socialize again. I gave a talk just on Zoom a couple of months ago. It was being the first one I'd given in about a year. Now, I'm a professional speaker. I've done it all my life. And the thoughts going through my head will be common to a lot of people. Have I forgotten how to do this? Will I still be able to perform? Have I forgotten all the tricks of the trade? Because I haven't done it for a year. For me to assume that that presentation would be just like every other presentation would be a mistake. For us to assume that we can just go back to work and pick up where we left off will be another type of mistake.
Now, Peter, I can't imagine what it would feel like to be in an elevator in an office building. You haven't done that for so long, and just the thought gives me the jitters. I also wonder what happens when we have a meeting. Do we shake hands? Do we kind of wave across the Zoom wave across the table? Do we not? So all these habits, what we used to do and expect is normal. Now we're going to question everyone. And I suppose we've got to come up with a new set of rules and guidelines about what's acceptable, because not everyone's going to want to hug.
If you watch TV at all, there is a phenomenon I think that everybody can relate to. When you're watching some of the more recent shows, people are masked and you're going, okay, that's normal. You see, that's normal now. When you're watching an old show where people aren't masks, there's a sense of, why aren't they masked? You know, you shouldn't be doing that. You shouldn't be shaking. Now, it's not overt. It's not loud in your head, but it's there. When you go back to work, I'm vaccinated twice now. I got double shots of Pfizer. I'm all done. But I don't see myself taking off my mask because the pandemic isn't over. The key there is pandemic. It's a global thing. Until every country in the world is 70% vaccinated, India, all of Africa, that's not a country, it's a collection of countries. Until we're all vaccinated, the world is not the same yet. I won't be getting on a plane until next year. I just simply won't do it. Why? I'm not afraid of getting the disease on the plane. I'm vaccinated, but I don't want to be around that many people. It makes me nervous, and I'm not alone. If you're listening to this and saying, Peter's a nervous Nelly, okay, that's your choice. But the reality is that a lot of people are going to find it difficult to shake hands, to hug, to sit in a room of people where there aren't masks. We're going to do it, but we will not be comfortable doing it for a long, long time.
And I can imagine sitting in a meeting room. And remember the Remember the old days where you'd go to a conference, a webinar, and they'd have the chairs, you know, the chairs would be linked together. And I never liked it anyways, because I would always go to the end and unhook the chair and give me about 4 inches, because I just wanted some room. I can't even imagine what it would be like now going in there where there's someone sitting right next to you.
No, it's going to be very, very strange. I wouldn't, if I came into a conference room late, I would not find a room in the center of an aisle, because it'll be, you know, really crushed with people on both sides. I'll be one of those people who stand at the back of the room or on the side of the room, but I won't try and take a seat in the middle of a cluster of people. That will be even more pronounced as we move forward. See, one of the things that managers, we're going to have to do if we want people to go back to any semblance of what we had before, is answer some questions for people. What's going to be different exactly? What's going to remain the same? And not remain the same from our old status quo, but what traditions and things that we did during the pandemic, during the lockdowns, which of those are going to remain the same? Some organizations are going to talk about a hybrid format, which I think a lot of people will appreciate, that we work from home 2 or 3 days a week and we go into the office for 1 or 2 days a week. If that doesn't add up to 5, we'll take an extra day off. Maybe we'll work a different set of hours when we go into the office. We'll go in for 12 rather than 8, so that we can balance things out and start easing into a new normal. And I think that is one of the major keys when we're talking to our staff. We're not going back to where it was before. If we phrase it that way, we're going to set up expectations, some of which will be good, some of which will be bad. What we need to identify is that we're going to back to something new. Now, it's going to be better, perhaps, than the lockdown working from home. But we're not going to give up everything from working from home, because there are just too many benefits. I mean, the number one is not having to drive in to work and then drive back. If I could cut that out of my life 2 or 3 days a week, the world's a better place in so, so many ways. The roads were clear during the lockdown. You could travel from one side of Toronto, for example, in the old 30 minutes, not the hour and a half that the way it used to be. And we didn't do that by building more roads. We did that by having less people on the roads. And that is the solution to congestion, which we stumbled upon.
Imagine
by happenstance.
Imagine that. Want to deal with congestion? Have less people on the road. No one ever thought of that. Crazy idea.
There are some blessings with COVID. Not many, but there are. Well, one of the other things to remember, and I think it's useful for people to really get a hold of how, I won't say resilient, because we could have a discussion about that word, but I will say how adaptable we are. COVID came out of nowhere. And one day we're working in the office, and the next day we're working from home, and that was going to be it for the next 6 to 12 months. And you know what? We did it. And we did it with, yeah, some chaos, some pain, but we did it. And we managed that change, which is the biggest change any organization has gone through in the last 30 years. Nothing compares to COVID. You mentioned Y2K. Y2K is trivial compared to COVID. COVID changed everything for the entire world. And not just talking about the deaths, but I'm talking about the changes to our society. We are social animals. Everything we do depends upon gatherings of people. Restaurants, sports arenas, conferences near and dear to my heart and your heart, live conferences, concerts, going to a pub. All of this requires that we sit close together, getting on a bus, getting on a subway. And all of that was changed by COVID. And now we want to go back. Be prepared for some pain. It's going to be difficult. It's not going to be what people think it is. A lot of people, we're just going to go back to normal, the safe place, the comfortable place. That place is gone. We have to rebuild a normal for the future.
Peter, the term that seems to be thrown about the most, so much that maybe we should stop using it, this concept of new normal. Maybe normal is a word we should just eliminate from our vocabulary.
It would be nice.
You mentioned that we're going from chaos to chaos. What's your definition of chaos?
Chaos is where you do not know how to achieve what you need to achieve. It's incompetence, where you are literally learning how to cope with everything around you. I use a change model called the Virginia Satir change process. And it starts off with the status quo. And then it goes through everything. And then the end of her model is called new status quo. In other words, the thing that we're going to become comfortable with, it's not normal. It's just a new status quo, a new place to be. And we always go from one status quo to a new status quo, a place that we're comfortable with to a place that we will become comfortable with in time. There's no place out there that is a normal in the sense of when we get there, everything will be honey and milk. It's not going to be like that. We have to become comfortable with the new place. I like her phrase status quo because it's an idealized place to go to. It doesn't exist. We build it just as we're going to build the place that we're comfortable with at work. We can call it normal when we're there because we get used to it. Right now, we're in the normal. The lockdown is normal for us. We don't go out. We don't meet friends. We haven't seen family in ages. That has become the norm over the last year.
Peter, what's the messaging that leaders need to be providing to their teams during this transition from one chaos to the new chaos and within the new status quo? What's the messaging? Does it change at each step? And what do they need to reinforce?
Oh, it very definitely changes from each step. In the beginning of a change process, the number one thing you need to communicate is why. The next one you need to communicate is what's in it for the individual that's trying to bring, that's trying to cope with the change. The next one is Monday. In other words, when exactly does this happen? When do we get to this one particular phase? Is it next week? Is it next month down the line? A couple of others are what might go wrong. In other words, what might be difficult? What might be unexpected? Another one, what will be difficult? We don't do this enough. We don't honestly talk about the pain involved in a change. And when we don't speak honestly about it, we're mismanaging the expectations of folks. So we have to manage their expectations. And then there's another one right at the end. And I think this one is going to be important, more so perhaps than in other changes. And that is signposts. How do we know that everything we're doing is providing a payback? What are the measurements that we can use that can help us understand that we are moving forward, that we're in movement? Because if we don't have signposts, if you don't have a feedback loop to say, when you did this, you got back this result. When you did that, you got back that result. If you don't have that as a way of managing your decisions, then you're just floundering. You are literally in chaos if you don't have a feedback loop. You asked me about chaos earlier. One of the things about chaos is it's so difficult to know if what you're doing is working. If we're trying to create a new normal, the new status quo, we need a way to measure our level of comfort. And the measurement will depend upon your organization and your team. Is it productivity? Is it just a lack of stress? Is it the increase in the small talk? One of the things that all of this is shown to us, I hope, is that small talk, that socializing that we do on a daily basis when we're around each other, is really, really important. On Zoom meetings, we have a tendency to start the Zoom meeting and we're straight into the meeting, rather than get on Zoom 10 minutes early and then have a chat. What's the weather like? Did you get your dose? How are you feeling? How's your family? All of that stuff is vitally important. And it's got nothing to do with productivity. It has to do with trust levels. How well do you know the other person? Do you see them as a person? Because if you see them as people, then you're more understanding, because they're just like you. They're not just faces on a screen. They're the people that you work with. They're your teammates. And the more we know them as people, the easier it is to work with them.
To know others as people, I suppose we need to share not only little tidbits about our life, but I guess also our joys and our pain.
You have to do all of that. You have to know what the other person worries about, what they value, what they desire. I mean, when you do your three questions at the beginning, now you do that because it feels right. I don't know if you're doing it consciously, but when you tell someone that I play Go, or that I bake bread, or that I like single malt, one of those, someone else in the audience is going, I play Go. I have a connection with that speaker. I make bread. I have a connection. He's a real person. He's like me. I do the same thing. That small talk makes all those connections possible. If you don't know anything about me, if I'm just a cipher, just a face on a screen, then that's all I am. I'm just words. But if you know something about me, then you pay more attention. It's the difference between being a stranger, a faceless stranger on the street, and someone that you've had coffee with and you've talked about, and you know their kid is in school and they have their ballerina showing next week. You can relate to that.
Now, that's interesting, Peter. I suppose it's as if I'm watching the news on television, or if I'm and I see a story about someone I know, my reaction is, I know that person. Let me hear more about that.
Exactly. One of the keys when we're communicating is to create a level of engagement with the speaker. And without that level of engagement, then I'm picking up my phone and I'm texting and I'm tweeting and everything while you're speaking. But I have a level of engagement, especially if it's personal. If we have something in common, then I'm more likely to pay attention to what you're saying. And that's the key to communication. Can you get the person engaged with the thought process that's being exchanged? If you can do that, then you can speak in front of people for an hour. And at the end of the hour, they go, that wasn't an hour. That went by, that just flew by. There's an old speaker joke. I came up with it, I think. Anyone in your audience can look at their watch. Shows you how old I am. There are no watches anymore. Anyone in the audience can look at their watch. They're allowed to do that while you're speaking. What they shouldn't be doing is tapping on their watch to see if it's still working. We've all been in a presentation where the speaker is speaking and you look at your watch and it's 10 past 10. And then you listen for another half an hour and you look at your watch and it's 15 minutes past 10. It's as if time has stopped. What you want to do, and this is what engagement does, is that you enthrall the other person and they pay attention to every single one of the words that you're uttering. When you achieve that, then you are communicating to your people. Do your people engage with you? That's the goal of communication.
Human beings, we have this wonderful gift of communicating. We also have the pain of miscommunicating. And when we start going back, where do you think miscommunication might happen where we're trying to create or live in this hybrid model?
The challenge is going to be managing expectations to make sure that both sides of the discussion are expecting the same thing. And we need to be honest about what the expectations are. We have been very productive in lockdown. Lots of stories, anecdotes, and some studies have shown that we're actually more productive at home. It depends upon the organization. If your day has been cluttered with Zoom meetings, you may not be that productive. If you've had one or two interactions a day with your folks who are in the virtual office, And the rest of the time, you actually get to put your head down and focus on what you're supposed to be doing during the day. You can be far, far more productive. One of the things I noticed when I went out on my own many, many, many moons ago, I had my old day timers. And I used to look through my day timer just out of curiosity and say, what would I be doing if I was at work right now? Well, chances are 80% of the time as a manager, I was in a meeting. And even in my own mind, I got nothing done. When I went out on my own, when I worked from home doing my stuff, there were no meetings. And my 20% of focused activity every day expanded to 100% of the time I was focused. So I was five times more productive at home than I ever was in the office. Now, as a manager, though, I was managing people. Working from home, I was not. The key is, when we go back, what are our expectations of a hybrid model? How much are you expected to get done when you come to work versus when you are at home? I suspect, here's a prediction, a lot of the time spent when you're on site, when you go back to the office, will be spent in meetings. And the shift will be that the 3 days at home, you won't have Zoom meetings anymore, but you'll have 3 days of uninterrupted, except for the cat and the dog and your kids, uninterrupted work at home. The other thing that would be nice, and I don't think we ever got to this point during the lockdown, is for management to ask about your home work environment. Do you have the right equipment? Do you have the proper desk? Do you have a space? And if you don't, how can we help? Because I tell you, real estate has been saved. In other words, the rental space of organizations, we've cut back. We could take that money and invest in our people, another $3,000 or $4,000 per person to create a proper work environment at home would go a long, long way to increasing at-home productivity. It's got to be a two-way street. The hybrid model is going to demand a different segregation of work. This type of work will be done in the office, team meetings, interactions, consultations, networking. And this type of work will be done at home. Report writing, coding, design work, whatever it is we do at home. We can segregate it, but we can only do that if that's what we expect to do and that we're clear about our expectations.
Peter, we human beings have managed to survive on this planet for thousands of years, tens of thousands of years, mainly because we've been able to adapt. And what aspect of our ability to adapt do we most need to call upon during this next progression in our evolution?
One of the key abilities of a change person, someone who can deal with change effectively, is the ability to deal with ambiguity, not having all the answers right now. An understanding that going through change means that we will be learning as we go along. One of the challenges for staff is to recognize that management doesn't always have the answers, that we're going to find the answers together. One of the mistakes that management can make is to pretend that they have all the answers. That works poorly in two different ways. One, if you're pretending you have the answers, you're going to make mistakes. And if you're pretending you have the answers, you're setting up a very, very high expectation of your people for you and your performance. It's far, far better to say, hey, we're on this journey together. We don't have the answers today. We need your input. We need your involvement. We need your engagement. And together we'll figure this out. Because together, that's why we hire people, so that we have more resources, so we have more thought processes, so we have different outlooks on everything else. One of the key skills, like I said, is being able to deal with ambiguity and not fixating on a solution immediately, but recognize that there may be many, many solutions to what we're going through.
Peter, I'm hearing that maybe when we start having these meetings, that maybe there needs to be three subjects added to the agenda. And here's what I wrote down. let's talk about chaos. What's happening? What is chaotic today? How are we dealing with it? Change. Maybe we need a change officer, someone, a champion of change. And perhaps we also need to counterbalance that by having a champion of status quo.
Okay. I like the first part. Okay. I like the first part. Here's the problem with someone who's in charge of change. Everybody needs to be in charge of change. Everybody needs to be thinking about change for a reason different than what you might expect. If you have a single person in charge of change, that person will be telling you what to do. This is the change we need to do. And the number one thing we hate is being told what to do. We don't mind being asked questions. Okay, here's a problem we're having. Do you agree that's a problem? That's the first step. Get agreement on the fact that the problem exists. And when people nod their head, now you've got them. Now all you have to say is, well, what do you think we could do about it? That gives you engagement without even trying. It gives you involvement without even trying. All you're doing is asking people questions. And the other one is, unfortunately, we all protect our status quo. We protect it as if our lives depended upon it. And the only way around that is for the change to be our idea, for us to be involved, for us to be putting answers out there and maybe solutions and making it ours. A kid that decides they want to ride a bicycle is both their change agent and the person willing to give up their status quo. I want to learn how to ride a bike. They get up on the bicycle for the first time. What happens? They fall down. If they were told to get up on the bike, they'll go, see, I told you this wouldn't work. If they wanted to ride a bicycle, they say, doesn't matter. I'm going to try again. Why? Because I want to ride the bicycle. Same thing in organizations. If we decide that a new payroll system is required, then the first birthing pains of that new system are irrelevant because we're like that kid who fell off the bike. It doesn't matter. It's my new payroll system. I'll make it work. This is the difference between telling someone to do something and asking someone what they should do. It's a huge difference. We don't resist change. We resist being changed. The only problem with that statement is it sounds glib. It sounds like a speaker quote, except it's reality. We will embrace any change that we decide to embrace. We will resist any change that comes from someone else.
We don't resist change. We resist being changed. That resonates with me, Peter.
Resonates with all of us. It really does.
Peter, for those who would like to find out more about you and your wonderful library of presentations online, the website is technobility.com?
No. www.technobility.online.
.online.
Now, something about the word technobility. Where did that come from? I'm sitting in a cubicle one day. And when I was working in IT, and someone on the other side is speaking to a user and is calling them a techno peasant. You're a techno peasant. And my response was, no, that's the wrong approach. We are tech nobility. We are the people who will make technology work for us. We're the nobility. technobility.online. There are more than 100 webinars there. It's put on by myself and Mark Mullally, and it is a good resource. You can go on, you can sign up for free for a month. After that, there's an annual subscription fee, but you can listen to everything. There are hundreds of hours of webinars on change, problem solving, project management, creativity, what resilience is all about, the limbic, the state of limbo that we're all going through. They're all types of topics. It's an eclectic mix of material for people who are managers and aspire to become managers.
Peter, for if there is, in wrapping up here, if there's one, two, or three ideas that you could reinforce with managers as they prepare and enter this next phase, what would be the top one, two, or three priorities you would suggest that they address?
There are three things that we have to keep in mind. One, the change going back into the office will not be easy. It's not a gimme. There's going to be work involved. If you assume that it's going to be easy, you're going to burn your fingers. Two, do not dictate what people do. Don't tell them. They've gone through a rough year. We all have, including the managers. We've gone through a rough year. Don't assume to have all the answers. And third, and it ties into the second one, is get input from your folks. Have honest heart-to-heart discussions and start with what was good about last year. Don't start with what was bad. We know what was bad, but what was good? What was the good that came out of this very, very strange time that we've gone through? What of the good do you think is possible to keep as we move forward? Let's not throw away the pearls that we have found in this very trying times. Get their involvement. Okay. So it's not going to be easy. Don't dictate. Get their involvement.
My guest today is Peter DeJager, reminding you that as we move from chaos to chaos, be sure to have clear signposts to measure your progress.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.